Hello and welcome to Small Black Birds. I'm AJ, and in this episode you will hear a story about 14 young men that played football at the University of Wyoming in 1969. While you likely haven't heard this story before, it will still sound familiar, because even though it happened over 50 years ago, many of the same circumstances and attitudes are still with us today. The Black 14, as these young men came to be known, is not often told, but when it is, it goes something like this. In October of 1969, 14 black players were kicked off of the University of Wyoming's football team by their head coach for wearing armbands against Brigham Young University to protest the Mormon Church's racist rules. The players' dismissal from the team sparked more protests on campus and beyond about the church's racial prejudice and helped contribute to the church changing its rules.
This is John Griffin, flanker for the University of Wyoming. Griffin won't be catching any more passes for the Cowboys. He and 13 other black football players were fired by Coach Lloyd Eaton for wearing black armbands to protest the racial policies of the Mormon Church and its university, Brigham Young. The Black 14, they call them. They have risked their college education and possible professional football careers to express their feelings about the racism of the Mormon Church. The Mormons believe blacks are cursed with the mark of Cain and so won't accept blacks as full members.
In this version of the story, the courage of 14 young men who took a stand against racial injustice is celebrated. The actions taken by players like Tony McGee and Jay Berry, whose voices you will hear throughout this episode, just 19 and 20 years old at the time, make for a powerful story we tell ourselves, of young people sticking their necks out to fight for something bigger than themselves.
Keep in mind, we were in the 60s. You know, civil rights was huge. It was a time to take a stand. I don't want to be defined by my color. I want to be defined by, as Martin Luther King said, the content of my character.
But like so much of American history, events from the past become forgotten over time or distorted by whomever is doing the telling. And there are parts to the Black 14 story that many people would prefer to forget or ignore. But even though it happened over 50 years ago, the story will be instantly recognizable to you because many of the same circumstances and attitudes that these young men faced in 1969 have not changed.
Back then, we would look at just as they look at Kaepernick now. Our message was misconstrued.
Misinformation, misunderstandings, the same thing is going on. Too often things go awry and they go crazy without us asking the question, well, why?
We're supposed to learn from history, and we don't. It continues to happen, and this is just a great illustration of that.
The Wyoming football team in the late 1960s was among the best in the country. The Cowboys had won 3 consecutive conference championships and were favorites to win their 4th in 1969. The 14 black players on the team, 6 of whom started, were a big part of the team's success. Players like Captain Joe Williams was a standout running back. Offensive tackle Mel Hamilton had returned from the Army to play for Wyoming. And lineman Tony McGee, a Michigan native who turned down scholarships at Michigan State and Nebraska, helped the team achieve a top 12 ranking in the nation after starting the season with 4 straight wins. But it was the 5th game, a home game against BYU, that became the turning point of the season and of these young men's lives. For weeks, student groups at the university had planned to protest the Mormon Church's racist rules that banned black members from becoming priests. Similar student-led protests had taken place at other colleges when their teams played BYU. McGee, Berry, and the other black football players sympathized with those efforts, but for them, it was much more personal. During the previous year's game between the two schools, BYU's all-white squad had hurled racial slurs and took cheap shots at Wyoming's black players. But what they remembered most happened after the game ended. Rather than shake hands with the Wyoming players, the BYU team quickly exited the field and went to their locker room. Then the field's water sprinklers were turned on.
On the way into the locker room, there was a picture of a gorilla and a black man.
As soon as we walked off the field at BYU, the sprinklers came on.
Hey, did you guys see the headline? BYU washes evil off the field.
Cleansing the ground because blacks had played on it. What? Really?
Remembering how they were mistreated, the players wanted to express solidarity with the protests against BYU. They met a few days before the game, and some of them started to unify around the idea of wearing black armbands.
Perhaps we could come up with a black armband. Maybe we can put a 14 on it, because there were 14 of us. This issue had to do with black and white. This issue had to do with oppression.
But as young men who depended on their scholarships to pay for their school costs and their living expenses, they were cautious to participate in any public protest. Also, as 14 of the only 28 black students at the University of Wyoming, in a state where less than 1% of the population was black, they also knew that their caution was warranted. So a day before the BYU game, the players went to head coach Lloyd Eaton's office to ask for permission to wear the armbands.
Thursday night, we decided that we should have a meeting to decide on what form of protest that we were going to have. We couldn't come to a decision, so we decided to go to Coach Eaton and discuss this matter with him.
But instead of the coach hearing their grievances and coming up with a way forward, the coach took the meeting in a completely different direction.
The next morning at 9:30, we entered the field house as students. Joe said, well, may we talk with you? And he said, yeah, you sure can. Instead of giving us the courtesy of a conference room or meeting room, he took us out into the stands, and we sat there, and then about a minute later, he came out. Coach Eaton leaned on the railing, and he said, I can save you gentlemen a lot of time. You're finished. You're all through.
The players were in shock. They had not even decided to wear the armbands during the game, and now they were being kicked off the team and losing their college scholarships for something that they'd only considered in private?
We weren't even given a chance. He didn't even know why we came in. We came to talk to him. No one said we were going to wear the armbands. As soon as we walked in his office, that was it. And nobody's mind was made up.
Instead of listening to how the players were treated by BYU last year, Coach Eaton called them troublemakers who no longer deserved their scholarships.
And he told us that, well, I guess now you fellas can go on Negro relief or colored relief.
And that we were saving the taxpayers a lot of money because we were all off scholarships second semester.
Throughout the meeting, the coach refused to let the players speak and told them that if they had not come to the University of Wyoming, they would have been on the street.
He said, most of you come from split homes and broken families and don't know who your father is.
The next day, and without any of its black players, the Wyoming football team took the field against BYU and won. The university's white student body loudly supported their football coach and criticized the 14 players for being selfish and bringing racial problems to the school. The following week against San Jose State, as Confederate flags waved in the stands and a small plane pulling a banner in support of Coach Eaton flew over the stadium, Wyoming won its second game without its black players.
It's mind-boggling. I mean, how do you do that? One day we were football players, the next day we were scum of the earth.
For the University of Wyoming, however, those wins against BYU and San Jose State would be their last. Wyoming would lose its next four games and finish the season at 6-4. The next year, still without any black players on the roster, Wyoming earned a 1-9 record and Coach Eaton was fired by the university. For many, the Wyoming football team's collapse was seen as the arc of the universe bending toward justice. But if you scratch a little deeper and examine not just what happened, but why, it quickly becomes apparent that this is not a story about justice. Instead, it's a familiar American story of how institutional racism harms not just those caught in its crosshairs, but ripples throughout society.
The dismissal caused a great stir on campus. Meetings were held with the governor, the administration, the coach, a student faculty committee, and the Black 14. The school's position was reviewed. Then a press conference was called. Coach Eaton, President Carlson, and school officials were present. The black players were not invited.
What purpose did it serve to callously dispose of those 14 young men? It certainly did not benefit the players, 10 of whom never played organized football again and were essentially blacklisted by most schools and professional teams. It did not benefit the coach, who saw his prestigious ranking vanish along with his coaching career. The school suffered too. Following the dismissal of the 14 players, black athletes refused to enroll at the university, and it would be another 20 years before the Wyoming football team would be competitive again. Similar to the national conversation that surrounded Colin Kaepernick's silent protest during the national anthem at professional football games, the Black 14's message was distorted by state officials and the public. Here is an exchange between a reporter and one of the players just days after being kicked off the team.
The coach said that he feels that somebody put you fellows up to this, that you were influenced by outside people as to make this a test case. Now, what's your answer to that?
I think this is typical, and if I might use the term, something that a typical white person would say. Now, since a black man stands up for what he believes, automatically they think that some other guy had to come in and instigate this thing. But this is something that is going to be happening throughout the rest of this century.
Even after weeks had passed and most of the players had left the school, the coach and other school officials refused to acknowledge the underlying concerns the players were trying to address with their silent armband protest.
We weren't being led by the outside instigators or agitators. I mean, there was nobody who could have turned me into, you know, a follower when I had so much at stake. I thought this is the way it played out in my mind. We would go talk to the coach, and he would give a definitive yay or nay, but he would also have an idea that we're really serious about how we feel. If they were, and I wanted to ask him, cleansing the ground because blacks had played on it. That's what I wanted to hear.
It's misguided to think that systemic racism only affects black people or other marginalized communities. Just as 19th century abolitionists argued that slavery oppressed and hurt white people by corrupting the self and society, today's Black Lives Matter movement encourages Americans to look in the mirror and examine their own complicity in an unfair system. Until we as individuals acknowledge and begin to address the structural racism present in our schools, hospitals, criminal justice system, and our country's history, the cycle of prejudice and discrimination will continue. Several films marking the 50th anniversary of the Black 14 are now available, and they provide more details about the players, the legal case that followed their dismissal, and how their lives were affected by losing their scholarships. Want to protect your right to protest? Check out www.rightsanddissent.org. Have questions or comments for me? Please send them to smallblackbirdspodcast@gmail.com. Stay safe and talk with you soon.
Leave it, Texas. Fourth day of July. Sun so hot, the clouds are low, the eagles fill the sky. First train.